Boys and girls, citizens of the world, this is Ethan from Real Life English, where we believe that listening to podcasts is a fun, natural, convenient, and
once in a lifetime
way to learn English. So download this podcast and listen to it while you're stuck in traffic, laying on the beach, catching some rays, or even
at the hairdresser.
Oh yeah. I'm joined here in the global studio, first of all, by Andrea. How's it going, Andrea?
I'm doing great, thank you.
And then also by the man who, when he says he's so hungry he could eat a horse, he actually means it, Justin Murray.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't eat a horse, actually, because I am a vegetarian, but I can imagine what it would be like.
What does that mean, you're so hungry you could eat a horse?
It means that I'm super hungry and I would eat anything.
Mm-hmm. So it's a great expression to use if you're dying of hunger. So today we are talking about some like great tips for you guys. If you want to be able to speak faster, if you want to be able to understand natives when we speak really fast, which is an essential skill if you're wanting to enjoy TV series, podcasts, or anything else, or even go to the country in person. So first of all, Andrea, what does it mean to speak English fast?
Well, I think once you get to a certain level, you can start thinking about the way that you're expressing yourself and maybe how you can make your English a bit more efficient in a way. So I won't go into all the details now, but you can definitely start to speak a bit more like a native with these tips that we have for you today. And that way you can make your English a bit more natural and a bit more efficient.
Mm-hmm. I think that word natural is really key because you don't want to be trying to speak really fast and then people can't even understand what you're saying because, you know, you just kind of like are creating a jumble of words.
Exactly. We don't mean try to speak really, really fast because that's not important. It's more just about speaking more naturally and, you know, not emphasizing every single word, which is something that we will explain a little bit later on. But that way you can speak a little bit more like a native and more naturally.
And part of that is to actually think more effortlessly, so it's more automatic. Part of that is the rhythm and flow of your English and your pronunciation, getting the words right. And part of that is the building blocks of the language to have the right vocabulary to be able to speak.
Totally. But we're not going to get ahead of ourselves. First of all, we're going to talk about today's shout out.
Aw yeah. So today we have a great shout out. It's actually labeled Aw yeah. Title, 5-star review from Apple Podcasts. Hello, I'm Yuka from Japan. I'm so impressed by all of your English learning contents, not only this podcast, but also YouTube and Instagram and so on. I can't help listening or watching one of them before I go to bed every single day. About this podcast, I love listening to your friendly conversations. Thank you so much for encouraging me. Wow. Thank you so much, Yuka.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's a really incredible shout out. And we know you're a really big fan when you actually put "aw yeah" into your feedback for us. So it's really great that you took the time to go over to Apple Podcasts. And if you want us to shout you out, it's really simple. You just have to do like Yuka and go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening and leave us a 5-star review. And this also helps people from all over the world to enjoy learning English with us, maybe before they go to bed like Yuka. So that said, let's roll into today's quote. So, Andrea, what quote do you have for us today?
So today's quote is from Rachel Wolkin, and it's, "Surround yourself with people that reflect who you want to be and how you want to feel. Energies are contagious."
Yeah. And would you say energies or would you say energy? Is that like countable or uncountable?
That's really interesting. I guess here in this quote, it's probably because it's to do with lots of people around you, and so their energies are contagious rather than it being one energy.
That's interesting. I always think of like energy as being one of those words that you can only use in the singular form. So like you'd say, you know, energy is renewable energy, just kind of talking about it in general, or you could say like that it requires a lot of energy, so talking about energy as a plural. But that's interesting that she, what you said, that she's kind of talking about it as a collective. So what exactly does she mean by that? And how can people apply that maybe to their English learning?
Well, I chose this quote because it's something that I really wish that I did more when I was younger, and I see the benefit of it so much more now that I've grown a bit more wise, I guess. And I think it's so important to think about the people that you spend your time with, because that's more or less kind of, or they influence you a lot and you'll become a lot more like them. So that's why she says energies are contagious. So if you're around people that are more negative, then that's going to have a really big impact on your mindset and your own particular energy too. So it's about thinking about who you spend most of your time with, and you want to be surrounded more by people that are more positive, especially in English language learning. You want to be around people that maybe can motivate you, that you can grow with and learn from, as opposed to people that maybe are lazy or negative about their learning.
It kind of reminds me of the quote from Jim Rohn, "You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with," which is a really inspiring quote as well, very similar. And like you said, spending time with people, choosing very selectively who you spend your time with. And right now, we live in this digital world and we're in lockdown, right? So a lot of people are like us, we're connecting via video call right now. You can connect with people all around the world. So in your English learning, you can select people from all around the world to be in your tribe, to be in your global tribe, and that five people to really help you with your English. So those attitudes and beliefs and behaviors rub off on you.
Mm-hmm. You have like a group of people who's all lifting each other up. And what did you mean by rub off, Justin?
Well, I'm going to pass this over to Andrea. What does rub off mean? To rub off on?
If someone rubs off on you, it means that you kind of take aspects of their personality or their attitude and things like that as well. So they have a direct influence on you.
What does to rub mean literally, Mr. V?
It's like when you're applying pressure to something and you're kind of doing a back and forth motion. So for example, when you're cleaning, usually like kind of rub dust off of things.
Yeah, you might hear like to give a massage can be like a back rub too.
That as well. You can do this with your hands as well if you're giving someone a massage.
So as you listen to our podcast or any podcast, make sure you choose wisely and really positive people, positive energy that rubs off on you in the right way. We hope we do that for you.
Totally. I think that a lot of times when you say like kind of the five people you spend the most time with, that doesn't necessarily have to be people you know. So it's kind of like, what books are you reading? What podcasts are you listening to? Where are you getting your news from? Is it kind of like a non-biased source and things like this? Because especially nowadays, I think with Facebook and Twitter, we've talked about this in the past, that they kind of create these bubbles. So you're just like always kind of hearing feedback of people who think the same way as you, which doesn't necessarily contribute to your growth as a person. But that would probably be a topic for another podcast. So Andrea, do you want to read that quote one more time? And then we're going to jump into today's main topic.
Sure. Surround yourself with people that reflect who you want to be and how you want to feel. Energies are contagious.
Oh, yeah. So without further ado, let's talk a little bit about how to speak English fast and understand natives. So Andrea, what is the first way that you can speak faster?
So the first way is something that you can probably get started on quite quickly, and it's to use contractions. So when natives speak, we pretty much use contractions all the time because it's more efficient, it's faster, and it's just an easier way of speaking. So for example, instead of saying, "I would like to go," we would say, "I'd like to go." Instead of saying, "He is driving," you could say, "He's driving." So it's kind of a simple way to start and is something that you can start off with slowly that will make you speak faster. And also, if you learn these contractions, you'll be able to understand natives speaking as well.
Yeah, I think that that's really important because most learners probably studied that at some point and they know of the existence of it, but they rarely use it because obviously it's like a little bit more confusing. So you have to practice this, like Andrea said, so that it kind of becomes natural for you. But something that I've noticed a lot too is like, even when learners are like reading something and there's a contraction, they'll see the I apostrophe D, the I'd, but they'll still say like, "I would." So it's really important, you know, I think just reading out loud, which means like reading, you know, with your voice, is like a really great way to start practicing this. You know, pick some passage from a book that you love and, you know, actually like practice saying those contractions and pronouncing them like a native would.
So one of the cool things about contractions is that contractions are, in some sense, more accepted forms of connected speech. It's like for example, probably before it became can't or he's or don't, it was does not or do not. And over time, we created these contractions thanks to connected speech, the way the natives cut and connect their words. And connected speech, what we call connected speech nowadays, is really just breaking the rules of grammar, the rules of that spelling that we have that haven't been mapped out by grammar so well now. For example, if I say like internet, it's not spelled internet, I-N-N-E-R-N-E-T. It's spelled internet. Or I can't even, right? I can't even cuts the T off of the end of the word of can't. I can't even. So that leads us to the next topic of connected speech. So if you want to sound more like a native, you are gonna cut, connect your words and learn how to find that rhythm in the English language in order to speak more fluidly.
And I think even if you don't care about speaking like a native, it's really important to know about this because you're gonna encounter it everywhere. And it appears in every accent of English. There might be like different ones in British English and American English, but you'll certainly encounter it by native speakers of both. So it's like, if you want to be able to watch TV series, if you want to go visit the country and you want to be able to understand natives, it's really important that you have a hold on this.
Yeah, because I'm quite curious actually. So one of the things you can learn to do with connected speech is to reduce verbs. So I was wondering, do you guys actually ever say the full version of these words? So for example, would you say, I'm going to?
Rarely, I think on rare occasions.
Oftentimes, yeah, I'm gonna.
Yeah, it gets even more reduced.
Do you guys ever use ama?
Ima sounds like more street, right?
Yeah. I think maybe I would do it very quickly if I was at home or something like that, but it's not as natural in British English. I'm probably influenced from watching TV and movies and stuff. But I'm just curious because I feel like I hear you guys say gonna and wanna and gotta like a lot more. And I was curious to know if you actually ever use like the natural, or not the natural, but the full form.
It's hard to be kind of self-aware, to be honest with you, sometimes.
Yeah.
Like sometimes, like honestly, I didn't even notice my own connected speech until I really started teaching and creating lessons and really analyzing the way I speak. Really like looking at, listening back to the recordings of me speaking. And then I started to realize like, oh my gosh, I'm using all this connected speech when I didn't even realize that before.
I think it's also, a lot of it has to do maybe when you're wanting to give more emphasis, maybe you will use like the full words. So mm-hmm. you might... If there, for some reason you're wanting to put more emphasis on that, you might, on like what you're saying, then you might say going to instead of gonna, to like, mm-hmm. you know, make it really clear to the person that you're speaking to.
Yeah.
But in general, in fast speech, anyway, if we're talking about fast speech, kind of the everyday conversations that we have with like friends and family, and it's like people of all age, people in business environments, it's like everyone uses this all the time in the US.
And I wonder if by speaking with me, my accent rubs off on you in any way and you start to speak a bit more maybe like how I would, because for example the v sounds like should have, could have, would have. Mm-hmm. Like I wouldn't, in English we don't say coulda, shoulda, woulda, like that's just not natural in British English, but it's very natural in American English.
I think that it does rub off on me a little bit when we've spent more time together and stuff. And I just noticed that I kind of like mirror people when I'm speaking to them anyway, I think is like, my ears like work like that. So it works to the advantage, like learning languages, but sometimes it can be like weird when you're speaking to people. But, I think that that's a really good point is like, you know, there's a lot of these differences, but that's still connected speech. What you're using in British English is saying could have and not could have, would have and not would have. And an American would just probably reduce it a little bit more in saying like coulda, woulda, shoulda.
David Crystal, who is a really famous linguist, British linguist, he has this hypothesis that British English is becoming more American. That because British people are watching so many American TV shows that they're kind of adapting a lot of the vocabulary and just linguistic patterns that Americans use. That you might find in, for example, Friends, for example. And that he was talking about how his kids are changing the way that they speak, and that he's really surprised over and over that they just keep introducing like American ways of speaking. I'm not sure if, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would actually. It's really interesting. I didn't know that, but thinking about it, I would definitely say that there is an influence, and we have probably changed the way that we talk in a way because of this influence. And, you know, even with teaching our YouTube lessons and teaching the differences between British and American English, I do find that I'm using some aspects of American English a little bit more. I'm kind of more aware of it now and like reflect on the way that I speak, and I'm even noticing the impact on my own English.
So have you started saying your T's like an American? Are you starting to say like, I want some butter on my toast?
Not that one, because that one is really unnatural for me. I use the glottal T probably when I'm relaxed and I'm at home. I'll just say butter instead of butter.
Do you think that's always typical for British speakers to say butter and not butter? See, for us, it's like really unnatural to say like the true T there, butter.
Yeah.
Sounds like really like you're angry.
I think it depends on where in the UK you're from. So for many people to actually say it with the true T, they probably wouldn't do it. It's probably, you probably hear it more with the glottal T, where you just kind of have that gap where the air doesn't come out and then the next sound.
Yeah, it's kind of like a cutting noise at the back of your throat. Mm-hmm. But we do have that in American English too. It just comes at the end of words usually.
Mm-hmm. Or we have it like fountain, mountain. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes gotten. When it's at the start of a syllable, right?
Or mountain, gotten.
So there's tons of like reductions like this, and we'll definitely probably do some full podcast just talking about connected speech. And also on our Learning English with TV channel on YouTube, we have like really fun ways for you to learn this with TV series and movies and songs. But actually, we are going to do a special excerpt from this podcast that you're going to find only over on Instagram, where we're going to teach you another reduction. So head over to our Instagram if you want to see that, which is @reallife.english. And we look forward to seeing you there. But now we're going to move on to the next thing that can help you to speak faster and understand natives better. And what is that, Andrea?
So the next one is to decide which accent you want to adopt. And that is if you want to adopt an accent, you know, because you have the choice. Many people learn English without thinking about their accent. They're quite happy to have the natural accent from the country that they are from. But many people do also like to choose an accent that they want to learn English with and kind of imitate in a way.
I think you can still learn with a global accent. Like there's global English that's kind of a little bit more neutral in some ways. I wouldn't know if that's British or American English, but I guess it depends on which flavor of global English you're talking about.
That's very true. And I think at least like for the listening part though, at least like when you're more of an intermediate learner, it's really important that you actually kind of have like a focus so that, you know, if you're learning American English, that, for example, you try to digest like a lot of American English, like TV series and podcasts and other things. And if you're learning British English, the same, that like, you know, you're maybe watching the news on the BBC or you're looking for different resources that you can use to be able to speak the Queen's English. And basically, once you get more advanced, then it can be very useful to kind of absorb other accents and stuff to kind of just take your listening to the next level. But you can also recognize too that even for like native speakers, for like Americans, maybe we won't understand like a really deep Scottish accent or a South African accent or an Australian accent in all cases.
I would say there, as far as focusing on a different accent, I think if, in my opinion, if you're gonna go to England and live there, if that's your focus, if you have a reason for that, I think that could be a good idea. But otherwise, I think if you want to have a more global and diverse English, I think it's okay to really expand your horizons and explore what you're interested in. I think like letting your interests guide you, like I think to really be a global English speaker, you need to be able to understand British English and American English. And I don't think there's anything wrong with if you have a podcast that you like from a British author, then listen to that. Or in another one from an American author. I don't think you need to segregate your English, separate them. I would say only if you really have a goal where you're going to live that place and you're going to only speak that English.
Yeah, I'm not saying so much like segregated either. I think it's just more of that, you know, if you're, it depends on your level as well. But I think like when you're starting out, it can be like really difficult, you know, for you to separate that until you've, you get to like a better level where you can like really tell the differences and everything. And so I think you're going to be able to advance faster if you have that focus.
Listening to British English, you know, listening to Andrea, listening to you, listening to me, I think that's going to be a nice variety. It's going to be a nice mixture that's going to give you, I think, both perspectives. So I think that's a nice path too.
For sure.
Wouldn't it be great if there were some way to understand real English without getting lost and without getting bored? Well, now there is. With our real-life native immersion course, we will take you on a 41-week real-life adventure of the English language, each week exploring a different topic connected to our goal to help you understand and use real native English and make it a permanent part of your life in a way that is fun, natural, and convenient. The best part is you can try it for free with our 3-part Power Learning series. We will send it to your email. Just go to reallifeglobal.com/pod. That's P-O-D to sign up. Now let's get back to today's podcast lesson.
So the next thing that can really help you to speak faster and to, especially I think for understanding this is really important, is paying attention to stress. So what exactly is stress? When we're talking about a language?
Well, stress, I think, in a big sense, it's the base of connected speech. It's content and function words. So content words are kind of the more substantial parts of language, of like nouns and the main verbs and other important things. And then function words are the connectors. They're like the connective tissue of the language. And they're like prepositions and pronouns and other things like that. So we reduce those. For example, I'm going to speak to you in English, right? So in this case, I said, I'm going to speak to you in English. In this case, let me ask you this, Ethan, which of the words are content words and which of them are function words?
So you'd have, well, if we took it going to anyway, I'm going to would be the going, and we actually reduce the ing, so actually even like parts of words can be like function words, like when you have a gerund, for example, the ing or the ed, and that's important to know just because like those will reduce and they link to the next word sometimes if it begins with a vowel. So you could have like I'm going, a lot of times we'll say it that way, but in this case I'm, that reduces even more to I'm gonna. So you have the go there, speak to you in English, and then two gets reduced to ta. Americans usually will reduce it to ta or da, and in British English, probably just to ta, right? I'm going to speak to you. Speak to you gets reduced. Speak to you in English. And then English, it would be the last content word.
So there are lots of these patterns out there, lots of content. Everything is pretty much content or function words, and this dictates kind of that musical flow of the English language. And ultimately, if you understand this and you understand to identify this in speech and to imitate it, this is really going to help you speak more fluently and also listen, understand better.
Mm-hmm. Something that can be like really good, if you're from a Latin language background, for example, where you have a lot of cognates with English. So like that means like you have like a lot of words that are almost the same or even exactly the same in English as they are in your language. Sometimes the syllable that is emphasized is different than in your native language. So that can be something to pay attention to.
But I would say here with word stress, connected speech, a lot of people say like, oh, I don't need to speak that way. I don't need to really speak like a native to be understood. And that's true. But I would say to those people that it can be like weight training. So it's like going to the gym. And so it might be nice to actually practice imitating mimicry so that you can actually build those muscles of pronunciation, because if you can make your pronunciation smoother, even if you don't sound exactly like a native, you don't need to sound like a native, honestly, to speak really, really well, but you can speak more smoothly, connect your words, flow more. And that's really going to help you speak more fluently and more naturally, and at the top of this conversation, quicker, faster.
Mm-hmm. And like really, I think for a lot of learners, the reason that they don't understand a lot of times when you're watching TV, for example, and like you have the subtitles and okay, like with the subtitles you can understand, but then when you take those away, sometimes it's really difficult to understand just because like you're missing words because of that connected speech. So if you're kind of practicing this, then you'll be able to identify that easier when you're when it actually comes to listen to a native.
Yeah, I also think that paying attention to the intonation as well is also important, because we tend to intonate or maybe increase the volume on the words that we want to emphasize and that we want to stress, you know. So it goes hand in hand with content and function words, but intonation and, you know, the volume of the words, of the individual words, can also make it an impact on paying attention to the stress and understanding the words that are being stressed.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's even important, for example, with like different types of questions. Like if it's a question where the answer would be like yes and no, yes or no, or if it's like one that would be a, I guess, like an open-ended question, you know, that would have like a longer answer to it. The intonation on those different kinds of questions, for example, is different. So kind of being knowing the different ways that we intonate when we're doing different things with the language is important.
Is anyone else analyzing the way that everyone is speaking right now?
A little bit.
I feel like I'm really focused on all of these things that we are discussing right now.
It's funny, yeah. If you're just like listening to this podcast, these different things, you can already start probably noticing us using different different things that we're talking about. So if you're kind of like enjoying these different things that we're talking about, but maybe it's kind of getting your mind buzzing, you're kind of thinking about all these different things and how do I possibly learn all this? We have a really great solution for you to learn it. Two solutions. They're both really fun. You can learn with this podcast in a more structured way, in a more effective way, or you can learn with the TV series Friends, which several different studies, academic studies, have actually shown is the best TV series to learn English, because it's just had such an immense impact on American English and British English even today. So Justin, do you want to talk a little bit more about those and how they'll help people to master these different fast speaking skills that we've talked about?
So to give you an example of what Ethan just talked about, we are going to offer for this lesson a free power lesson and lesson from the Native Immersion course on how to revolutionize your English with podcasts, which basically takes the entire 20-minute conversation that breaks down all these ideas that we talked about here in a much more succinct, very focused way, and teaches you everything from connected speech to native vocabulary to word stress, and maps it out in a 25-page PDF power lesson together with definitions from all of the words, with pronunciation examples. We teach you exactly how we pronounce every single word and the content and function words as well, as we talked about, together with pictures from vocabulary. And it also comes with an audio file for the lesson and 20 Anki vocabulary files that have pronunciation as well. So if you'd like to take advantage of that, one of our best lessons from the Native Immersion course, go to reliefglobal.com/speak-english-fast. Speak-english-fast.
So that said, the next thing that will help you a lot to speak faster, to understand natives, is to learn how to use and also ignore fillers. And exactly what are fillers, Andrea?
So you kind of just used one there where you said, so that said, and then you kind of went into the next thing. So that's like a filler. So that's kind of taking you from one part of the conversation to another. So we often say things like, anyway, you know, like in the middle of a conversation, you know, when we want to change the subject or we want to change the direction of the conversation. Or I would say to someone, by the way, do you know about this? And by the way, that's just a filler in the conversation. So if you know them, you don't need to focus on them too much. If you're having a conversation with someone and they are using these kinds of words to kind of fill the conversation, then if you know that it's a filler, if you recognize it as one, you don't have to start thinking, oh, what did they just say? Or what are they talking about? You can understand it and then think about understanding the rest of the conversation, the other aspects that you really want to get the meaning of. And, you know, if you want to speak fast English as well and kind of link your sentences or the structure of your conversation, then you can also use them.
I noticed several as you were speaking there, Andrea, like,
yeah,
like, you know, so kind of like, there's this really great video of Justin Bieber. I think he says like 50 times in like a 60-second conversation. So actually, this is when he was a lot younger. I don't know how mature he is now, Justin Bieber. But At that point, it was used as kind of a representation of how immature he was, how superficial he was, because it's kind of when you use too many discourse markers, you can sound like you don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Although I think for English learners, it can also almost be like a good hack to being able to take more time when you're speaking, because you can use them to kind of creatively have like a pause, you know, when you're speaking. So you could kind of see just from what Andrea was saying before, how Justin pointed out that she said like, kind of like, actually. And we do these kind of when we're thinking sometimes, and we're kind of trying to process our thoughts and link them together. And sometimes they actually add like a little bit of extra meaning, but it's not so important to understanding the whole concept of what the person is saying. Although if you're getting to a really advanced level, then maybe you'll actually start studying the subtleties of using different discourse markers at different moments. So Andrea called these fillers. Another word that we use for it is discourse markers.
One thing I was going to say, like Andrea, you said kinda. So kinda, I would argue that's American. That comes from kind of like, because it's kind of the same thing as like you mentioned could have, would have, should have.
Yeah.
You don't say could have, would have, should have, but it's the same thing. It's the V-E, the of sound, yeah. Could have, turning into a So kind of yeah. Like.
I think it's you guys influencing my English.
Are there any British discourse markers that Americans don't really use?
I can't think of any right now. I don't know if you guys do it, but we tend to say a lot more. And I remember speaking to a friend from America years and years ago when I was younger. And I don't know if it's true for everyone, but she told me that when she was in school, she was taught to say like in the pauses. So instead of saying she said that she was taught to say like, because I'm just saying now. So she was taught to say like, because it sounds better than saying so you can use that as a filler.
That's another really good tip, though, I think, for people if they want to sound more like a native, knowing that thinking sound. So in English, it's people say when they're trying to think of the next thing that they're going to say, or they're nervous or whatever. I think that that's like really useful, because, for example, in Spanish, they say like which, you know, is completely different. So, you know, if you're doing that in English, it would sound really unnatural. But if you actually know the thinking sound, then even if you're trying to think of like the next word that you're going to say, if you use the word that an American or a Brit would use, if you say then at least you'll sound like a little bit more natural when you are left without words.
Another one I just noticed that Andrea said is actually but right? So she used it with with the T, the stop T, right? But we often say in English, like but in American English, sorry. Yeah. And there's actually an episode of How I Met Your Mother where Robin, who is a newscaster, right? Like she's a weather woman, mm-hmm. I believe, on the news, but she says butum a lot. And so Ted, and I think Ted and Barney, I don't remember who it was, but they watched and they drank every time she said butum.
They created a drinking game. But anyway, that's another discourse marker. But anyway, let's move on to, we have just like a couple more that are dealing more with the building blocks of the language, as Justin mentioned at the beginning. Then we're going to look at slang, learning slang and actually using it as the first thing, and then we'll look more at other types of vocabulary. So what exactly is slang, Andrea?
So it's the more informal way that natives will speak. So we've actually learned that we have lots of different slang that we use. So if you don't understand slang, it can be very confusing, because you might take the word literally. So for example, if something was really, really good in British English, we would say it was wicked. But wicked actually means evil. But that's not the meaning here. If it was wicked, it was amazing or fantastic, you know? And what would you say in American English for that?
It was wicked. We'd probably say it was awesome. And awesome is, it means literally that you're in awe because of something. And when you're in awe, it's kind of like your mouth is open, you're left without words. It's something that's just like really incredible. So it comes from that, but like we almost never use the literal meaning of awesome nowadays. It's pretty much always just means that something's really cool.
Yeah, and then for example, in England, we tend to say, oh, I fancy a cup of tea. Or if you have a crush on someone, like you would say, we would say, oh, I fancy that person. We don't really say, oh, I've got a crush on that person.
Although maybe that's changing. If a lot of kids are watching like American TV series, maybe they're using the crush more.
Could be.
Fancy just sounds like extremely British, I think, to like any American that hears that. Because like for us, fancy just means that something like has class, it's sophisticated. Mm. And we pretty much just use it for that. We don't really use it for like the wanting something. We might say like you have a hankering for something. I think that's really American. I don't know if you've even are familiar with that, to have a hankering for something.
No, I'm not. That's a new one for me.
Would you use that, Justin?
I don't know that. I've heard it before, but like not very often. What does it mean?
Maybe it's like my part of the U.S. that we had like the cowboys. For me, it sounds like a really cowboy word, but...
Ethan is, he's from Durango, Colorado. So it's like, if you ever see those Western movies, that's where Ethan's from.
The Old West. So that's probably where it comes from. If you have a hankering, it's like you have a craving. Mm. You really want something.
Yeah, we use fancy all the time. Like I probably say every day, like when we're deciding what to have for lunch or for dinner, I'll always say, what do you fancy?
So probably the most common in American English then would be like, what do you feel like? What sounds good?
So oftentimes I think slang is really important. I think in different levels, like on one level, it's great for connecting to people because I think slang is really... like an interesting way to just let people know that you speak like them, that you share their language. And I think slang, a lot of times you have different regional frameworks for slang, but oftentimes it can also help because people, they'll use slang and they'll speak really quickly. For example, just one thing I'm thinking about, this is it's very slangy, it's very urban in the United States. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Oftentimes, mm-hmm. Know what I'm saying? Or, no, I'm saying.
Yeah, that's a way that if you want to sound maybe a little bit better, you're not sure if someone's like understanding what you're saying in English and you want to respond in a way that maybe isn't just like, do you understand me? That sounds like really like something an English learner would say. It's like, do you know what I'm saying? Like it's kind of more checking that they understand the context of what you're saying and not so much just the individual words.
It's similar to, do you know what I mean? You know, say, mm-hmm. Know what I mean? Know what I mean?
And in Britain, we would say, do you get me?
We'd probably say more like, do you get that?
Yeah, we'd be like, do you get me? If you want to be really urban, you say, do you get me, bruv? So instead of, it's like a way of saying brother, you say bruv.
Bruv, really?
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, we just say bro.
Yeah.
Okay, kind of filling out this topic of the building blocks of language, because really, if you want to speak fast in English, like we mentioned before, it's important to really build your fluency so you're thinking automatically. Right? And then focusing on the rhythm and flow. But then slang is important, but also you have idioms, phrasal verbs, and other really key components to the vocabulary of language.
Totally. I think that these can be like really fun. And I think English learners are always really drawn to expressions, to idioms and things like that, because, you know, it's kind of, you play with the language. It definitely kind of gives you more of a feeling of being more advanced in your English. But I think something that you have to be really careful of is not overusing them, because I see some English learners that's just like any time there's any possibility of using an idiom or an expression, they use it, and you'll have like like someone writing a paragraph and it's got like 10 expressions in it, which a native would probably not tend to do. We tend to kind of like use them maybe to give some emphasis or something like that. So I say like it's great to learn expressions. You definitely need to know them to understand, but just kind of use them in a tactful way. Use them in a way that's kind of like, you know, you're really wanting to put emphasis to a point, but don't overuse them.
I think that sometimes that's often like it's a phase that people go through when they're first learning them. It's like, if you're just all you study all day long is like idioms, then it's going to be really fresh in your mind. Every situation is going to be an idiom, and that can be really fun and playful, but yeah, definitely be careful.
Yeah, it's true. I could definitely take for like one situation, I could take back what I said. When I know for me, like when I learn in any of the languages I speak, when I learn a new idiom, I usually try to use it a lot at first because that way I remember it. So like then when I have like a way that I could say that with using an expression instead of like just maybe a normal word, then I will like use it a lot just to burn it into my memory.
So you learn it like the back of your hand.
Exactly. What does that mean?
To learn something like the back of your hand, it means when you learn it so well that you memorized it and there's no doubt about it, it's automatic.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You might say like that you know a city like the back of your hand. It means that like you know all of the streets probably because like you live there or something like that. So another type of expression, I suppose it's a type of expression that tends to give English learners a lot of pain, are phrasal verbs. I think it's kind of like, you know, the bane of every English learner's existence is having to memorize phrasal verbs.
Yeah, I'd say phrasal verbs are a really important part of fluency, of advanced fluency, that really there's no end to it because there's so many phrasal verbs that can be so confusing. You know, one word means many different things, like get has so many different meanings to it, and they're all different. So almost you need to memorize, you need to learn the mechanics of it, but once you get it down, it's so useful. It will take you so far with thinking fast in English, with speaking faster, with just being more fluent.
Totally. People tend to get really intimidated by phrasal verbs because they tend to look at it as like the verb and then like a bunch of alternatives to the verb, like using a particle. But if you look at each one like it's kind of like its own expression or something, I think that it makes it a lot more digestible in a way, because then you kind of just start to see it like, you know, you can learn a couple a day and stuff, and you can probably remember them better as well that way. But they are very important. Something I tend to see, again, for example, taking Latin language speakers, that they have a lot of these cognates and stuff, but we tend to use kind of like the Latin cognates in English, usually more in formal situations. And so I see like a lot of learners, you know, that are Spanish or Italian or French speakers that will overuse these words, and learning phrasal verbs is definitely a way that you can sound more natural than overusing these kind of more formal sounding words.
Can we give an example to close it out? To work on?
To work out, or you might have like to lift something up. Like you could say that you are elevating something would be another way to say that, but we'd almost never say that. We say like lift it up, you know, to bring it to a higher level.
But going back to work, I would say there are a handful of really dynamic expressions that change with each one. So I said, or you said, to work out, but what about to work it out?
Oh yeah. If you just, that's kind of like funny because it's like a phrasal verb where you add like another word and it changes the meaning. So work out, like to exercise, and work it out means like you're kind of coming to a solution with something, right? That you're, for example, if you and your partner, your girlfriend or boyfriend or husband or wife are like fighting, you might need to work it out. You need to kind of like find a solution to your problems.
Or you might say, hey, don't get so worked up.
Don't get so worked up. It means like you're getting really anxious or excited about something, right?
Yeah.
Or like angry even.
And you might need to work off if you overeat maybe and you feel really uncomfortable. You might say, oh, I need to go out for a walk and work off that burger. Or I need to go for a run and work off that burger I ate.
Exactly. So you're burning off some calories.
Yeah.
So phrasal verbs are very dynamic. Don't let them scare you. We actually just recently did a really fun lesson kind of teaching phrasal verbs with TV series and how to learn them. So we'll link that also in the show notes. But we've talked about a lot of different topics today, and I think it can be very intimidating. But if you want a more structured way to look at these, a really great place to start is with our courses, and especially getting that, taking advantage of that free taste that you can get of the Real Life Nick course, the Real Life Native Immersion course, by downloading the power lesson that Justin mentioned. So we will link that also in the show notes, which you're going to find over at reallifeglobal.com/speak-english-fast. And we hope that you really enjoy that. So thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll see you next week on the Real Life English podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Hey again, I hope you enjoyed today's lesson. Don't be a stranger. You can find all of the notes, like vocabulary, links, and more for this lesson on our blog at reallifeglobal.com. And connect with us on Instagram at reallife.english for even more fun English recommendations. Do you want to continue your learning and get confident, fluent English? Then I have a couple great recommendations for you. First of all, check out our YouTube channel, Learn English with TV Series, where you can have fun learning to understand fast-speaking natives with your favorite movies, series, music, and more without getting lost, without missing the jokes, and without subtitles. Second, if you like our podcast, then our Real Life Native Immersion course is perfect for you. It is the next best thing to studying abroad in an English-speaking country. Try it for free with our 3-part power learning series. Just go to reallifeglobal.com/pod to sign up. Finally, if you are enjoying our podcast, then please assist us in helping more people go beyond the classroom and live their English. You can do this by sending a link to this podcast to a friend or by leaving us a 5-star review wherever you are listening. We might even shout you out on the podcast. Stay healthy and safe, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Aw, yeah.